Here we go. Here we go. Thank you for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. Hopefully, if you're listening to this, you happen to be as big of a fan of the program Hey Arnold as we are. But if you're not, that's totally okay. Maybe we can teach you a thing or two. I'm Cody Narveson, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
I'm Harry. You can find me on Twitter at Shiitake Harry.
And I'm Emily. You can find me on Instagram at Emily Sui.
And also, in the figurative booth with us is our super producer and budding mathematician, Jason Daphnis, and you can find him on Twitter at Nintendoofus. You can also keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at StoopKidsPod. That is kids with a Z. Today we'll be digging into episode 13 of Hey Arnold. The first half of this episode is, of course, called Tutoring Torvald. Original air date, October 28th, 1996. The Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. Arnold must tutor a 13-year-old fourth-grade bully in math, much to his dismay. Beautiful. That's it. As always, shouting out the fine folks who made this episode possible. We've got Jamie Mitchell supervising the direction. We've also got Larry Leaklighter and Sherm Cohen co-directing this episode. The sole writing credit for this episode goes to Joe and Salaber. Shoutouts to that fine crew we've got. I'll kick it over to Harry. What were some of your big takeaways from this episode?
Yeah, thanks, Cody. I like this episode a lot. I think it's a really good example of how Hey Arnold can really organically and normally sort of introduce a lot of different complex and really important and tragic even ideas into an episode without overcomplicating the A-plot or making it something that children won't immediately recognize. It's like a classic idea for an episode, right? Like Arnold has to tutor this kid in his class who's a bully and who is maybe dumb. Everybody thinks he's dumb. But like, because it's Hey Arnold, it's never just left there, right? And like, even though the arc of the episode ends up going where you would think it was, it also introduces the actual sort of systemic and underlying reasons why Torvald is not succeeding, which, as we'll talk about, include his class, the fact that he's raised by a single working mom, the fact that he maybe has had a different sort of pubescent or developmental growth period than most of the people in his class, or that is normal for his age, or quote unquote normal, and maybe even some underlying anxiety or some internalized self-loathing and feeling that he himself is stupid, right? Even though the episode goes out of its way to show that he's not. All of that is like really important stuff to demonstrate to kids, right? And to build empathy in kids. And it's very affecting, like even to me watching it now, just because it is so resonant with the actual real world circumstances that I have seen and experienced in my life. And so it's just a really good example of how Hey Arnold can take these ideas that kids will immediately recognize and use them as a staging ground to explore some really complex and important issues using the sort of characters that we know and love, right? I mean, this is a great episode to use Arnold to say something, and I think that's what it does. And I think it does it without being preachy or without being overly sort of like didactic or too in your face about it, I guess. I'm saying the same thing over and over again, but you get what I mean.
I do. I think that's all really well said, and like a great point to take away from all this. Emily, what did you think of Tutoring Torvald?
Yeah, I think this is a great episode that treats Torvald, who's kind of a bit of a bully around school and older than the kids in his grade. I think it does a good job of treating him in a sympathetic way. despite all of that. And we really get a good idea of his like backstory, like Harry was describing. But most of all, I take away from it like the anxiety I feel of just seeing them all taking a math test in the classroom. So yeah, this episode is great overall, as they all are. And yeah, wow, do I hate math class? Wow, did I ever hate that class?
Yeah, can relate. Even though one of my majors was in math, I ultimately like. I'm glad both of you spoke to the like the certain like representation of like. Person, not personality traits, but just like traits of people, and how those things don't necessarily overwhelm or overcomplicate the story. You know, things about like you're feeling anxiety watching this because like the people in the middle of the story have anxiety, and like, you know, maybe the person watching is somebody who like has trouble concentrating in school, or is like part of a working class family, or as we see in the second half of this episode, maybe there's somebody who gets stressed out about people coming over to like where they live. And just like the fact that that sort of representation is on screen is like a consistent strength of the show, right? And like recontextualizing those sorts of things to draw, even if they're not like grand conclusions, but just like the fact that, you know, we come out of this, it's not exactly like an urban legend or urban myth story, even though it's structured kind of in the same way. Like Torvald is kind of a one-off episode character, and it's, you know, the episode being broken up approximately into thirds. It's, you know, we're observing the myth, and then we're deconstructing the myth, and then we're sort of like resolving or reforming the myth if we can. And like, at the end of the episode, like this imposing figure, he comes away with a C+, which is like, and like everybody's thrilled about it. And like, that's not something that's classically reinforced in real life, you know? And like, it kind of speaks to, I think, the grander like things that you were talking about, Harry, about, you know, like we're not getting really into the faults of like public education or anything like that, but also we kind of are. And like the fact that we can come away with like a nice conclusion that we maybe weren't expecting, or that Arnold wasn't expecting, you know, Arnold comes away with this from this with something too. I don't know. It just feels good, man.
I had never thought of this as sort of an urban legend type episode, but I think that's a really excellent framing, because it's doing the same sort of thematic arc that those episodes do, right? Where it's introducing something you think you know, or something sort of accepted as this sort of mythologized wisdom, and then it's breaking it down, like you said. But in this case, the breaking down that it's happening is basically the idea that Torvald is just dumb, or the idea that he is naturally, quote unquote, scare quotes, like that, instead of disenfranchised, or instead of right. A person with like real feelings and real reasons why he arrived to where he arrived. And I'm really impressed with the show's utility and its ability to deal with all of that so effectively, right? I mean, we've talked about how tight the show is before, and I think this is a really great example where like there's not a moment wasted in this thing. It's like it's so lean, and they get through so much, hitting all of the beats so well. Where like I'm thinking of three in particular, right? Which is like that first scene when Torvald's in class and his teacher commits like this really gross microaggression against him, where he is not paying attention in class, and he says, "What's 3 times 3? He says 33. And she like stops the class and she's like, "Torvald, you're 13 and you're in fourth grade. Don't you want to be with your friends?" And it's like the way that the show does it, it's so quick that it doesn't stop. But like, that's traumatizing. Like that's a miserable thing for a teacher, for an educator to say to a human being, like to a child. And I remember microaggressions like that happening in class in my schools, and like how devastating they were to children. And so like, it's really fascinating that the show chooses to like think about how Torvald might have been affected by that. And then the inverse happens, right? Where we see his mom, and his mom has that picture that he drew when he was in kindergarten of her in her house that he got a C on, and that's like her pride and joy. The suggestion is that she doesn't have a lot else to be proud of Torvald about, but she doesn't see it that way. She sees Torvald as great at school and great at making friends and great at being a kid, right? And there's a really good line that she has where she says those chicken fingers aren't going to cook themselves, I think, right before she leaves.
Sell themselves, yeah.
That line fascinates me because it's like, it in most shows, that would be sort of like a weird, like, a mean stinger almost. But, like, this character carries it off with such dignity and such, like, grace in the way she says that, and she's clearly supposed to be such a likable character, that it's just an illustration of, like, another thing that might be difficult for Torvald, is that, like, his mom works nights and she's a single mom, and so he's alone all the time. And it's like, it turns out when you're a kid and you had a growth spurt early and you have teachers telling you you're dumb and you have a mom who has to work all the time, so she doesn't have time to care for you the way that other kids are getting cared for, it's going to affect your grades, right? And, like, it's going to give you some anxiety and some internalized understanding that you're not smart enough. And hey, it's maybe going to make you a bully too, because you start to think about all of the things that you don't have that other kids have, and it makes you mad, right? And, like, I think that the show does a really great job of really quickly, you know, like, quicker than I just did, illustrating all of those intersectional factors of what makes a child not excel at school where other kids can, right? And it really demonstrates the plasticity of childhood development and how sort of like excellence or achieving in a school setting has so little to do, nothing to do with quote unquote inherent intelligence, right? And I think that the show really actually actively like is interested in that. And Arnold is interested in that because of course he would be, right? And so it's the perfect, it's the perfect point to take on as Hey Arnold, I think. And I think the show does a pretty good job with it.
Yeah, I think so too. And like you said, it doesn't stop and sit with any of those like microaggressions or like any of those intersectional factors that might be, you know, difficult to discuss in one sitting. You know, it's just like they're there and then they're gone. This episode moves in ways that like previous episodes of Hey Arnold that we've talked about, like, you know, those take moments of pause every once in a while. This one feels pretty rapid, but like in an episode that could otherwise be very somber and very like, I don't want, maybe not troubling, but kind of, I guess, depending on what your background is or like where you're coming from with this episode, like, it is a funny episode, and there's a lot of levity with Torvald's character. Him like a screaming to the heavens as like the camera pulls, or the camera, it's an animated show, but like as like he gets smaller and smaller into the distance, is like a gag that will never not work on me. We have fun with the bullying angle a little bit. There's some fun interplay with like the triangle of Gerald looking out for Arnold, who's trying to teach Torvald. We're using like bullying and taking out loans from like a bullying society, you know, him as like the
right
Torvald is the person where kids are taking out loans from and like using that to teach math. Like, all of that is very funny, and like it helps this episode move. And like, you know, you're thinking about these things in the back of your head, like, you know, we're kind of making the subtext text, but like we're thinking about them just enough without, you know, from a kid's perspective, not like overthinking them, like it's been said, you know, in such a way that bogs down the rest of this story. And that's really, really cool to see.
Yeah, I totally agree that this is a pretty funny episode, despite also holding on to some heavier elements with Torvald's life and home life and stuff. I was just thinking of the ones where Arnold's tutoring him and he starts giving Torvald some scenarios that would
so good
maybe help him later in life if he does in fact learn how to do math correctly. And Arnold's like talking about, what if you worked at NASA and you don't know how to count down? What if you're working on Wall Street and you mess up the negatives and the positives and the market crashes? What if you're working at a restaurant and your boss at the restaurant wants you to count down like napkins at the tables divisible by three? Which that was so funny to me because it's like he gives some good examples, like, but they're all goofy. But the last one like hits home, I don't know, just in a funny way. Yeah, it's a great episode, fellas.
It sure is. I really like that example too, because what ends up happening is Torvald finds out he actually is good at math, right? And he's good at math because it's something he uses in the process of him being a bully. And that's a really fascinating and funny sort of classic Arnold twist, is that the reason why Torvald is good at math when he's being a bully is because he self-identifies as a bully, right? Like, even on his door, he has a sign that says bully parking only. He refers to how all of his other friends are in Juvie Hall. That's sort of his identity. And when Arnold starts to make appeals to that identity and say, like, this is how what we're doing relates to you, relates to what you care about, then Torvald really flourishes within that, right? And that's how he ends up getting his C-. There's this great cutaway moment where Torvald is sitting at the desk taking the test and struggling, and Arnold is watching him from outside. And Arnold grabs another kid and, like, mimes hitting him. And then Torvald's like, oh, yeah. And that's how he, like, solves the problem. It's like that correlates so well with what Arnold is saying about sort of personal identity and self-determination in general throughout all of the shows. But it's also just like making a really good humanist point about how, like, when you engage with kids on their terms, even if their terms are really, like, funny and sort of self-destructive, maybe, or not what you would want them to be, that's how you, like, get through to them, is the way you get through to anybody, right? Which is, like, treating them like they're human and meeting them on their terms and trying to understand how they see the world. And so, like, it really, like, it doesn't feel like a didactic episode because of the tone control, but it is really making a strong statement about how to interact with people and how to respect them, right? And even that, like, there is no such thing as a stupid person, right? Or complicating that notion for Arnold as it is for us. And, like, it's so heartwarming to think about a kid, you know, like me or like anybody who watched this, watching this and thinking about the kids in their classes who are maybe poorer than they are, or maybe, like, grew differently, or maybe have different developmental challenges, and think about how, like, they actually might have circumstances that are holding them back instead of just being stupider than you are, which is, you know, something that America has a vested interest in teaching us. And so I think that resisting that is a really good idea, and it's really great to see shows do it. And I know Arnold isn't the first show to do it, and not the last, certainly, but it feels really good to see it do it.
Yeah, certainly one of the best to do it, I would think. I don't think that's too hot of a take. But yeah, as we maybe look to wind down this discussion, it's come through in a few different points here. But just either of you, do you have any, I guess, experiences to speak of, either like tutoring or being tutored or like anything? Just because this is a very, I think we all came from points where like bits of this episode spoke to us and like, minor to more major ways, and I didn't know if there was anything that like either of you could, I don't know, you know, sort of off the cuff that didn't really fit into what we were discussing with this episode.
Yeah, I mean, like, I remember growing up, even in elementary school, like, I always struggled with math, and I really, looking back now, think that it was largely because early on in my development, somebody told me I wasn't good at math, right? Like, I'm pretty sure that, like, my skills and my interests always sort of lay along the lines of English, and that was something that I always was praised for as a kid, right? But I was always also told that that I was bad at math. And so there's an interesting chicken and egg situation there, right? And like you think about that, and then you think about like your other privileges, right? Where like I was a middle class, like white kid, and I wore glasses. And so growing up, everybody told me I was smart, right? And like that helped insulate me from a lot of the effects of like being, of internalizing anything else. But like I can imagine, or only imagine, right? Like if anybody had told me I was dumb, or like if anybody hadn't told me I was smart, right? Like, and even if the teachers who saw my grades, which were not exceptional by any means, hadn't said like, oh, Harry can do better than this, because mostly because, again, I was a white kid, like a white boy, they thought I could, just like because of implicit bias, like who knows where I would have ended up, right? Like it has nothing to do with like personal intelligence. And like, It has way more to do with the fact that like I had a math tutor when I was taking my ACT, and I had a bunch of teachers who, for whatever reason, thought I was quote unquote not living up to my potential, right? And So like that's how I ended up being, you know, moderately academically successful, right? And like, it's easy to extrapolate that out to all kids, both successes and failures in within that system, right? It's so much easier to deterministically see how these things happen than it is to, or, you know, rather than accepting this narrative that there are just kids who are smart and kids who are dumb.
Yeah, for sure. That was making me think about, there's one shot where they're in the classroom and you see the whole class taking this math test, which is, you know, the big climax of the episode, really, is it's what Arnold's been tutoring him over. But just like, I was remembering back to that, in that scene, like just taking a test in school, and like some kids just finish before you do, right? So like even just that alone like causes so much anxiety. Yeah. Or at least it did for me as a kid. And you're like, like my friend just finished before me, does that mean like they aced this test and I just flunked it, or am I just like, do I look kind of dumb to my friend now because I'm not doing this as quickly as they can? And yeah, the music in that scene just was adding so much to the anxiety memories of taking tests in school, especially math tests. And the way the shot was framed, it's like the teacher's perspective looking down on the kids from the front of the room. So yeah, really great scene and great music by Jim Lang for that entire test-taking scene.
Yeah, and not to get too real with it, but like, what you just said, Emily, like that is a literal depiction of anxiety. And I mean like anxiety as like a medical condition, right? Because that is another huge form of semi-invisible privilege that makes a huge differentiating, is a huge differentiating factor, excuse me, between kids and particularly the success of kids, right? Like if Torvald had an anxiety disorder that came from his mistreatment at the hands of teachers or his self-loathing, that makes a huge difference, right? Like, and that is something that was virtually unexamined until like literally the 90s, I want to say, right? Where like ADD was being talked about as a new thing when I was coming up through school, right? And people were skeptical about it. I mean, I don't know if Charlie would want me to say this, but like my sister, Charlie, she's been on the pod, check her out. She's a genius. Excuse me. We'll edit that out. She told me like a year ago that when she was in elementary school, she was diagnosed with attention deficit disorder. And like, I never knew that because my parents just straight up elected not to do anything about it, which again, they, I don't blame them. They were operating off of the information that they had. But like, she is also a dyslexic person and she never got great grades in school, right? Like I was always considered the quote unquote academic person in our household. And it's like, gee, I wonder why, right? Like, I wonder why that is. And instead of something else, is it because I was a guy and I was smarter than her? It's like, no, it turns out it's because there was a bunch of stuff going on that we just didn't know how to address, which is the kind of the point of this whole episode, right?
Wow. Yeah, that is wild. I will use that heated energy to segue us into final shout outs. The one shout out I want to give is to, again, just public education institutions in general. Thinking back to when I was in specifically like middle school and a little bit of high school, like I'm thankful that I'm like reasonably competent at math. And my dad, with his engineering background, also was like, is very good with mathematics. But for any time when I got stuck, there was just this huge disconnect between like him and I, him trying to convey what needs to be done, because like math is just generationally taught differently. Like the numbers itself are computed the same, but just like the ways in which we teach math to people for whatever reason just like morph over time. And it's bizarre. I don't know how bad of a thing that actually is, but whatever, I made it out okay. I will crawl out of this hole and toss it over to Emily.
Thank you, Cody. I'm glad you made it out alive. Yeah, I was gonna give my final shout outs to Torvald's cool boots. I love to see those. They kind of look like my Doc Martens. Also, the posters in his room are killer. He's got Torvald's room, he's got a poster called The Throbs. It looks like a band poster. And then Harry mentioned the bully parking only sign. There's also, just to like give a comparison to from a cool band poster to the classroom poster, we see a "Math is fun" in all caps by the teacher's desk. Which, oh God. And yeah, shout out to Torvald for speaking my mind, which was that math is bogus. No offense, but I am not a numbers person. I am a shapes person. So yeah, those are my shout outs for this one.
Yeah, Torvald also has a sign, like a road sign that says no exit on his wall, which I guess we're learning a lot about me this episode. But when I was in high school, I think, I wanted to steal a no exit sign from my mom's hometown in rural Wisconsin. Wow. And tried to because I was a fan of Sart. And so I wanted to display that, and my grandpa got really, really mad at me because he said it was a federal crime to steal a sign because I forgot that he worked for the transportation department for his entire career. So that was a fun little aside from my, but I'm just, that is all to say that Torvald is a king, and he's a Sart fan, and he has a great no exit sign in his room, and that just goes to show that he might not be great at math, but he's a deeply soulful and intellectual individual with a rich interior life that we shouldn't look down upon.
Amen.
Wow. Yeah, praise be to the king. We're ending this half episode with a lot to unpack. I guess we'll just have to unpack it in the future, because for now, I think we aced that discussion of episode 13A of Hey Arnold, Don't Touch That Dial, because we'll be right back to discuss episode 13B after the break, so stick around. Welcome back to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. We've arrived at our discussion of episode 13B of Hey Arnold, which is called, of course, I am in the wrong tab, Gerald Comes Over, original air date, October 28th, 1996. Same as episode 13A, if you had trouble keeping track. The Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. Gerald visits Arnold's boarding house and meets the eccentric boarders. I gotta say, the episode summaries today are chef's kiss. Once again, shouting out the fine folks who made this episode possible. We've got Jamie Mitchell supervising the direction once again. Also co-directing, we've got Julie Murphy and Bert Ring. Writing credits for this episode go to Rachel Lippman, and look out below, it's Craig Bartlett, the king. Welcome back to the opening credits of the show and of the podcast. Good to have you back, Craig. Emily, I'll kick it over to you first. What were some of your big takes about Gerald Comes Over?
Yeah, well, first of all, I did not remember this episode being called I'm in the Wrong Tab. So that was nice.
Oh!
Got
him.
Just kidding. But yeah, Gerald. 13B, Gerald Comes Over, an excellent episode to see all of Arnold's neighbors, the boarders. We get to see Mr. Purdy. He makes an appearance in this one. Shout out to Mr. Purdy, who apparently is hiding a chicken in his room. Yeah, Arnold again is acting like a landlord, though, in this episode, which I know all of us don't.
You hate to see it.
Yeah, we hate to see that aspect a bit, but as far as like a funny episode where we get to spend some time with each of the boarders, get to know them a little bit better, it's a great one for that. And getting to see also Gerald's family for the first time at the very start of the episode. So cool. Yeah, an excellent episode. I think both of these episodes here that we're talking about today are great ones.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Harry, over to you. What did you think about the episode I'm in the Wrong Tab?
Yeah, I'd love to echo what Emily said, which is just that, like, I love an episode where we really get to see a bunch of characters, particularly characters that don't always come up in every episode, and we get two different sections of that, right? Like, I love Gerald's family. I love Timberly and Jamie O and his mom and dad. Particularly, his dad is so funny in this episode. And then, as if that weren't good enough, which it would have been, we also get to see, like, One by one, the boarders all get their own individual scenes as Arnold walks to each of their apartments. And Cody, you even said, sorry if I'm stealing your thunder, but you said this would make a great pilot episode. That's so true because it does so much world building and it does such a great job of like illustrating all of the different personalities and how all of these personalities are so lovable, even if they're frustrating, right? Which is, that's the over-under theme of the episode, right? Is that Gerald, at the beginning of the episode, he apologizes to Arnold about his family because to him, he's sort of ashamed of how silly and dysfunctional his family can be. And Arnold says, what are you talking about, man? Like, this is so much fun. Your family's so normal. I have such a great time over here. That's what gets Gerald to say, well, can I come to your place then? And I can see how you live. And Arnold is similarly ashamed and sort of embarrassed about his family life. But then wouldn't you know it, like by the end of the episode, Gerald had had as great a time at Arnold's house as Arnold had had at his, which is like just a really great, again, super resonant, super identifiable message for kids that they will immediately understand, right? Like I can remember sleepovers where I was like, I don't know, I would rather stay over at your place because like, my mom and my dad or my sister might embarrass me. And like that never happens, right? It's always a great time and they're always and so like it's such a good way to like to give kids perspective, right, about their lives and how their lives are different or similar to one another's. And just a really heartwarming episode, landlordism notwithstanding.
Yeah, we thought Arnold was a comrade, but I guess we need to revisit that. Echoing Harry, like that was definitely my big, like the pilot energy of this episode is very difficult to ignore. And like the fact that this episode is constructed around little vignettes is maybe too strong, but just, you know, scenes with each of the boarders who by this point we've all come to know. And so it's nice to see them again through Gerald's eyes, who is also a character that we are like already are very familiar with. And even if this isn't a pilot, there's certainly something valuable about it in, you know, the littlest ways probably. But, you know, if thinking about these two episodes that were paired together, like if Tutoring Torvald is about contextualizing people and situations and lifestyles, then Gerald Comes Over is maybe about like recontextualizing, you know, the fact that we have seen all these people and like their scenes are them kind of in their element, you know, like the strongest, most defining features of these characters shine through and, you know, they're putting on a show for Gerald. And that like there's something uniquely watchable about that. Again, even if it's not the first episode of the series, which it seems like it's really, you know, well suited for. I'm glad, you know, people being in their elements, you know, prime example, Grandpa, who is in the office, which is of course the bathroom. He's not talking about raspberries or eating like prune cereal, but he's drawing his hands with a cat and he's reading his bathroom reading material is a book of lisps, which is just like Arnold prefacing, you know what I'm trying to say,
like prefacing.
this like sleepover with Gerald as a sort of bonkers off the wall Mad Lib situation is characterized very well by their interaction with Grandpa, so that stood out.
And Grandma
for sure. But yeah, this episode kicks, as the kids say.
Hey, at the very end of the episode, Gerald actually says that your house kicks, and I was like, man, I gotta start saying that. Kicks. It sounds great. Yeah. To say things kick.
I took the mantle a little early. You stole my thunder. I'll steal yours just a little bit.
It kicks, dude.
Yeah. I think I maybe mentioned off mic, you know, we were talking about this episode. This has one of the most, I guess I'm getting into shout outs a little early, but it's like the only other big thing I have from this episode. One of the most memorable moments for me from Hey Arnold is the moment when Jamie O, Gerald's brother, says to Arnold, hey, you know how you can get milk to shoot out of Gerald's nose? Just say booger. And Gerald calls him a liar. And with all the confidence in the world, takes a big swig of milk. Arnold says booger, calm, cool, and collected as always. And milk, the animation of this milk shooting out of Gerald's nose. I feel like I torrented this episode once upon a time. Hey Arnold episodes were among the first things I torrented. And that was a part that I like rewound on my computer.
Cody, you can't say that. Craig might listen to this someday. Come on.
Oh my God.
Comrade Craig, my apologies. I forgot even what I was getting to. Yeah, anyways, I love this
episode. Oh, I'm sorry.
The misinformation.
Yes, yeah, exactly. I'm going to kick it to somebody else before I, like, incriminate myself further.
Yeah, I really love that specific moment because it's such a great Big Brother moment where like Jamie O is like, he's using his younger brother's best friend to sort of like chide his brother and sort of like insert himself there. It's so funny. It's so something a Big Brother would do in that way. They're all characterized so well. And I really loved what you said, Cody, about recontextualizing, especially because like that is the framing that the show uses for the viewer themselves, right? Is like, first we get to see Gerald's family for the first time, I believe, at least all together, certainly. Arnold is sort of our POV character there. And then that shifts and we get to see the boarding house through Gerald's eyes for the first time. And even though we've seen the boarding house before, it looks fresh and exciting and new, and we like it, right? Even though the adventures there are somewhat embarrassing to Arnold, they're fun to watch. And like, that's such a great metaphor for that perspective, right? Is that like, even the things that feel stale to you or frustrating to you, they're exciting to somebody else because you haven't experienced them before. And so like, you do have things to offer your friends or your loved ones. It's like, they're seeing something that maybe you're not seeing because it's new to them. It's a really heartening thing to suggest to kids, right? And a really great way to build kids' pride in themselves and their families, in their sort of dynamics. And it's great to see it illustrated here.
Yeah, it's so sweet to see Arnold talking to Gerald at the end when they're sleeping on the roof and just apologizing because his house isn't exactly ... normal. And Gerald's just like, what? No, are you kidding me? Like, you are shaking down people for money. You got to bust up some fights. Your house kicks. So
it's great.
It's so sweet. And yeah, I have just a lot of shout outs, but I was curious to hear what y'all's favorite border appearance is, like who the standout is for you.
Oh, I was going to ask that same question. I'm so glad you asked.
Go ahead, Harry.
Oh, Mr. Wynn is my favorite. I think he does a hilarious thing where as soon as Arnold comes over, he puts him to work the way that any good resident of a boarding house should, where he's got him doing all sorts of like owner maintenance, like redoing his floor and fixing his plumbing. And then they spend like hours doing this and he offers them a dime as a tip. And then he says, oh, and I'll have the rent tomorrow, which is a running gag where everybody has the rent ... tomorrow. So funny. So good. You'd love to see Mr. Wynn leveraging his relationship with his landlord to the hilt, as we all should. What a king.
Not to mention just the coolest of banana wallpaper patterns.
And on his fridge, too, he had like a banana like decal on his fridge. The man loves bananas.
Yep. Shout out to Downtown as Fruits, eh?
True.
The man does
Cody,
love bananas.
What about you?
Yeah, mine is maybe a bit of a cop-out because we don't technically see Mr. Purdy. We hear the conversation through the wall, which is in itself like an interesting scene for Hey Arnold for a couple of reasons. Because I guess like having a scene where the conversation is framed through a closed door is a novel take, you know, a novel spin on that type of scene. But then what Harry was referring to, the point of view shifting over to Gerald, I mean, that scene like exemplifies that idea at its most I don't want to say egregious, but I mean the camera is still on him for like a minute and a half, 2 minutes, as his facial reactions and expressions evolve over the course of this ridiculous situation that he's hearing about, you know, somebody hiding a chicken. He's not hiding a chicken, but we can hear the clucking. And at one point, Gerald just has his mouth agape. He's silent. His eyes and his palms are facing the heavens. That got a good laugh out of me. It's not technically an appearance of old Mr. Purdy, but we saw Gerald instead. Vocal appearance for sure. Yep. Shout out to Mr. Purdy's chicken as well, I guess. Question mark.
Yeah, what kind of grown man would live with a chicken?
Hey, ask Mr. Purdy. But for now, I'm asking Emily, what was your favorite appearance?
I really love seeing Susie and Oscar fighting, and they're just, well, not that I love to see them fight. Don't love to see fights. Right. But the fact that Arnold is ready for plates to start flying. And he's
so funny.
He's just at the ready in the hallway. Gerald's like, what is happening? And Arnold just starts catching all of the dishes that are flying at his head.
At one point he says, stand by for pottery.
Yeah, he knows it's going to happen. He's been through this scenario before. And then, of course, Susie and Oscar make up once all the boarders go to dinner. So, yeah, they really make quite the entrance into this introduction for Gerald to see all of the boarders at once.
Yeah, no, definitely. One thing that I remember that I was going to say earlier, and it's Harry said a lot about himself last episode. This is just adding a little bit more to the Cody story. But like part of the reason I gravitated so much towards Gerald's like laughing milk nose fit is I was definitely prone to laughing fits as a kid. Like if something really just tickled me, like you could not get me to stop laughing to the point where like somebody I would be at daycare with, all they would have to do is say some, you know, something like peanut butter, and then I would be in stitches for like 10 minutes. It was ridiculous.
That's adorable.
That's so freaking cute.
Pivoting away from me, anybody else got any final thoughts or shout outs with Gerald comes over?
I've got some shout outs. All right. We hear Grandpa singing, oh, my darling, oh, my darling, oh, my darling Clementine. And we don't see what's happening, but based on what the boarders are discussing over the audio when Gerald and Arnold are about to walk into the boarding house, we know that Grandpa's just singing in the shower and all the boarders are waiting to get into the bathroom. They're like, only have the one bathroom. That's funny. Shout out to Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind with that song about Clementine. But yeah, and then my other shout out is for the darts board in Gerald's room. I freaking love darts, and it's great to see the coolest character also loves darts. So shout out to Gerald for that and his cool star patterned room.
I want to shout out the great brick joke that they set up with Gerald's dad, where when they're downstairs at the dinner table, Gerald's dad keeps trying to get everybody's attention to talk about the electric bill. He says, quote, electricity doesn't grow on trees. He's very concerned about it. Later on in Gerald's room, Arnold keeps trying to turn off the light to go to bed because he doesn't want to talk about the possibility of Gerald coming over. And Gerald keeps pursuing it by turning the light back on. And every time he turns that light on, I'm like, you got to stop doing that, man. Your dad is going to get so mad at you. Like, what are you doing? And then, of course, like the third or fourth time it happens, his dad comes like charging into the room and he's like, what's going on in here? You're acting like electricity comes out of the air or something like that. It's really funny. Shout outs to Grandma, of course. She is in the midst of a safari in the kitchen.
Of course.
And refers to Arnold and Gerald as two of her sort of safari compatriots. She's like the first introduction to the craziness of the boarding house that Gerald gets introduced to, and so we get a really great scene with her. There's a really funny moment where she's chasing around a fly to kill, and at one point we see through the fly's POV, so we see a bunch of grandmas in the fly's eyes as she's saying something about how she's going to kill the fly. I thought that was really funny. This is just like, it's such a great episode. It just moves so well. The Ernie scene, which we didn't talk about because Ernie wasn't any of our favorites, but I really love that scene. It's really funny. He's talking about the history of his bricks. We get to even see Mr. Smith again. It's just like, it's such a great payoff to a bunch of already established world building, and it makes a bunch of world building in the process, right? So it's just what a classic episode of Hey Arnold.
I mean, sadly, we don't actually see Mr. Smith, but I totally know what you mean, Harry.
Right. Yeah. Agreed. Great classic episode. You know, not to turn the light out on it, but you know, electricity doesn't grow on trees. As always, thank you all so much for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. If you feel so inclined, follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Stoop Kids Pod. That is kids with a Z. This episode was produced by super producer Jason Daphnis, and you can find him on Twitter at Nintendoofus. I've been Cody Narveson, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
I've been Harry. You can find me on Twitter at Shiitake Harry.
Peanut butter. I'm Emily, and you can find me on Instagram at Emily Suey. Thank you all.
Very sneaky. I'm well past the... I'm already screwing this up. When all else fails, dear listener, just lay down. We'll be right back.